We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm so thrilled to be here with you today. It's 11 minutes after 3 o'clock. I hope you're enjoying these peaks of sunshine that I can see through the WCCO radio window. Susan Blanche at the helm, Paul Douglas still on vacation. I'm Jordana Green. If you're missing Paul, please, right now, as long as you're not driving, log on to our Facebook page, the Paul and Jordana page. You will see a sight for sore eyes, and then you will think, how can I unsee that? Because it is Paul Douglas in his lederhosen and his Doppler sneakers. It's a fashion statement that might give Anna Wintour a heart attack. People should be turning their heads away, but it will make you laugh, I promise. The sneakers are great on their own. We did a video about them. But paired with the lederhosen, really, that is something special. So I urge you for a laugh to get over to our Facebook page and join in the fashion fun. Because we got serious stuff to talk about here on the show. Let's talk North Korea. Gordon Chang, our expert from yesterday, is joining me. He's the author of Nuclear Showdown. He's an expert on China and North Korea. And he joined me again this morning. Again, his schedule filled up quickly, so I got a few minutes with him before the show to talk about the ramifications. What happened? What are the next steps? Good, bad, ugly for North Korea, for the U.S., how President Trump did. He answers all those questions at 3:35. I'm more interested in your opinion right now. I know you've been talking about this with Chad and John and Dave amongst yourselves. Maybe you've been watching a little bit of the news or hearing snippets on CCO. You think we did well? You think the president accomplished his goals? Is any progress good progress? Go president? Or why are we meeting with these despots? And this should never have happened. My phone number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-WCCO. Or you can just say, hey, Siri, call WCCO radio. Remember? Well, now my Siri's. Sorry, my Siri just went on. I told you yesterday, just plug that in your phone. So when you're driving, very easy to call me. My text line is 81807. Here is how Mr. Trump sounded after his summit with Kim Jong-un.
President, what surprised you the most about Chairman Kim?
Great personality and very smart. Good combination.
Be a worthy negotiator.
Really, he's a worthy negotiator. We had a terrific day, and we learned a lot about each other and about our country.
What did you learn about him, sir?
I learned he's a very talented man. I also learned that he loves his country very much.
That he's a talented man, and he loves his country. Some reaction we are hearing, it is about another part of the on the Korean Peninsula. The South Koreans were surprised that we are going to be stopping the annual war games or exercises that have long been defended as defensive by and vital, of course, by our allies. This is what President Trump had to say about our military presence in South Korea.
I want to get our soldiers out. I want to bring our soldiers back home. We have right now 32,000 soldiers in South Korea, and I'd like to be able to bring them back home. But that's not part of the equation right now. At some point, I hope it will be, but not right now. We will be stopping the war games, which will save us a tremendous amount of money, unless and until we see that the future negotiation is not going along like it should.
Bringing them home, or possibly at some point wanting to bring them home. I asked Gordon Chang specifically about if this is a good idea. You know, when I think of war games, I think, oh, it might be just a show. Gordon's response was, no, they're absolutely necessary. I'll give you a little bit of what Gordon had to say, but then I want to hear what you think. Did we do well in North Korea? Did we give up too much? My phone number is 651-989-9226. Here is Gordon Chang on just some brief thoughts.
So I think President Trump should have pressed harder for a much more detailed statement, ones which included all sorts of things like, for instance, a firm pledge to give up all nuclear weapons, a pledge to give up all ballistic missiles, short and long range, a pledge to dismantle the weapons infrastructure, of course, agreement to a strict inspections regime. And also, I think they should have committed to giving the Japanese an accounting of the abductees, those people who had been kidnapped by Kim's father and grandfather.
That was an interesting point. And Gordon mentions that, you know, these people, there were people in Japan that are literally lifted off the street by Kim's regime and the regime of his father. And Japan clearly, in earnest, wants to know, where are these people? When will they be released? Can we have them back? Are they alive? And we don't know too much about that. So Gordon speaks a little bit more about that in my extensive interview with him at 3:35. And he also said, you know, it's not just the U.S. responsibility to fight for the U.S. He said we have to also be an advocate for Japan, mentioning these abductees. That might be another question for you. Are we on our own here? Clearly, with our president now, we have been acting America against the world. You know, is that a good way to be functioning after the G7? We're feeling a little more lonely, or at least stand alone. Is this a good way to go in? Should we care about the Japanese? Should he have negotiated something about that? He did bring up Otto Warmbier, who was killed, put into a coma in a detention camp in North Korea before he was released to his parents in Virginia, and he died here in the U.S. And Gordon says, you know, Mr. Trump did bring that up in the meeting and gets a lot of credit for that. Gordon also made a list of things that Mr. Trump did get credit for during the summit, and you will hear all of that coming up at 3:35. But let's do this. If you want to talk, I'm here for you. 651-989-9226. If you want to text me, 81807. If not, we're going to move on. It is 3:17. I got to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get back to your calls. Jordana here. Thanks for spending some time with me this afternoon. If you haven't already gone to our Facebook page to see that ridiculous picture of Paul, I posted with his permission, of course, in lederhosen and Doppler sneakers. You'll also see, you should go now and look at it, but you'll also see another story. It's a story of a man caught on video destroying a homeless person's encampment. Now, this happened in California. A jogger, Henry Sinte, was jogging, and he passed, in California, I guess, homeless people just sort of take up space on the street and make a little camp for themselves. He was homeless, but he had some clothes and looked sort of like a mini tent where he was living. And whatever belongings this homeless man owned were, you know, scrunched up near this lake along this jogging path. And this jogger jogged by, as maybe he does every day, who knows? And he decided he had enough, apparently. And he started taking this person's belongings, the homeless person wasn't there, and throwing them in the lake. And then he was kicking some more of it around, and then he threw it in a dumpster, taking his stuff and just throwing it in a dumpster. You watch the video, you can see it's actually quite an amassment of belongings, you know, that belong to a homeless person. And people are videotaping this, telling him to stop. And he says, nope, I'm not stopping. I'm just cleaning up. Got to clean up over here. I'm just cleaning up. So clearly this is causing quite a bit of outrage on YouTube, where it's posted, and then on our Facebook page. And I encourage you to take a look and then join in. Ron says, disrespectful for sure. But is it? I'm asking you. Is it public property, and are you allowed to camp out there? Or is it public property and everybody should be able to enjoy it so you can't make your home there? Because obviously this person was not paying taxes on the land, and that's obviously where he lived. We don't have a homeless problem like that, you know, like the one in California, so we don't see it as much. What do you think? Sandy on Facebook writes, total lack of respect. If this person was living on property he didn't belong, let the police handle it. I doubt that if it had happened, that law enforcement would trash this person's belongings. There she's saying law enforcement would not trash this person's belongings. She goes on to say, it just shows the judgment being made about our fellow human. What happened to the there but for the grace of God go I? It is really disappointing. That's from Sandy. Boy, who among us hasn't known somebody who really did reach the end of their rope at certain points and was down on their luck? We've all been down on our luck at some point. So I'd love your thoughts. It's a pretty trending video. Lots of people are talking about it. We want to share in the conversation on Facebook. You'll see the video of the Oakland jogger. You can chime in there. Coming up later in the show, as I mentioned, Gordon Chang is going to break down what did we get out of this summit? What did North Korea get? How did it go for all of us? And if you'd like to chime in, I will certainly read texts and maybe we'll have a chance to take some calls after that. Another thing I wanted to talk with you about is if you are a night owl or not. A new study says night owls have a higher mortality rate than those who go to bed early. This is what I try to tell my kids. You have to charge your phone downstairs and get off your social media at 9 p.m. because you need to sleep. I'm a sleeper. Personally, I love to sleep. I can sleep late. I can go to bed early. I love to sleep. And I'm sure I get about 8 hours. I don't go to bed necessarily earlier, but I probably average 8 hours a night. Well, this study says by Northwestern University and the University of Surrey in the United Kingdom, night owls who prefer to stay up later have a higher mortality rate, a 10% greater risk of dying than morning people. But alas, fellow night owls, I'm not a morning person at all, but I think that's something ingrained in you. I don't think you can become a morning person. You either are or you are not. Handsome husband is up at 5:30, he's out of bed at 6, doing his stuff. You know, he's hanging out with the dog. There's coffee. There's the paper. The whole shebang. He accomplishes so much before 8 a.m. before I barely open my eyes. My number two, my son, total morning guy. He's up. He's playing his video games, walking around the house. He's doing his thing. Me and the girls could sleep till noon. All right, I can't sleep till noon. Just the teenagers do that. But we are not night owls. So we might just have bad luck and have a 10% greater risk of dying than morning people. I know, isn't that terrible? The study also found the evening types also had higher risks of conditions for diabetes and psychological disorders. One of the study authors writes, night owls trying to live in a morning lark world may have health consequences on their body. See? It's not a choice. I'd love to be able to accomplish more in the morning, get a workout done. I just can't do it. I can't. It might be in our genes, the study says. So we're just at a disadvantage. I'm sorry to bring you the bad news. The study authors say if we can recognize these chronotypes that are part genetically determined and not just a character flaw, jobs and work hours could have more flexibility for night owls. I love that. So if you just can't wake up early in the morning, you're not really going to be so good at the bus driving job that has to get you up at 6 a.m. Are you a night owl, Susan, or are you an early riser?
I'm an early riser
now. Talk on the mic.
I used to be a night owl all through college, and then I used to work overnights and nights and radio and stuff. But after I had my kids, I was like you. I could sleep. I would prefer sleep over anything else in the world. But then when my kids got older and could handle themselves getting out of bed, and I took a bus driving job, I wake up at like 5 o'clock on a weekend without my alarm.
So
I'm kind of conditioned. But I go to bed earlier now because I can, because I'm not driving my kids everywhere.
Do you think, though, that you trained yourself to be more of a morning
No,
person?
I think it's because I actually get sleep now. I never had sleep when I was raising children. Mm-hmm. But now that I don't have to stay out late and with my children at activities, when I get home from this job, sometimes I just go straight to bed.
I don't blame you. Sometimes I do that, too.
I'm whipped.
I know, but I still don't wake up early in the morning.
And I don't watch TV anymore. And that really helps a lot.
No TV in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. You'll have more sex
I only have TV in my living room
downstairs,
anyway.
Yeah.
But I used to come home and sometimes veg in front of the boob tube after work, but I don't anymore. Now I just go straight to bed.
I'm seeing your texts now that they're coming in. So sorry, there was something wrong with the text line there. People were chiming in on that video, Susan, that you posted on Facebook. Someone texts in, totally wrong. If you need to ask the question if homeless are okay on public property, you are owned by the 1%. No human should be ever be forced to do this. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And we're going back and forth here with the Kim Jong-un stuff. Kim Jong-un stuff. Aren't we jumping the gun here? More things need to be negotiated. For someone to say President Trump should have done this or that is absurd at this point. Well, we're going to hear from an expert because he really did have good perspective. He gives us sort of a nice look down the nose of what's next, what has been accomplished, what we could have done better, and what you and I can expect. So let's do this. We'll take a quick break. I'll get to your texts, and we'll hear more from Gordon Chang on North Korea on CCO. Welcome back. Jordana here. Thank you for spending some time with me. Gordon Chang is the author of Nuclear Showdown. We spoke with him yesterday about what to expect. He's an expert on the Korean Peninsula as well as foreign relations with China. I spoke with him today on how we did. Here are his thoughts post-summit.
The important thing is that President Trump has started a process that I think will eventually lead to the disarmament of North Korea. But we should have gotten a better statement for this first summit. This first summit was important for the North Koreans because it legitimized the rule of Kim Jong-un, and that means he solidified his position back home. That's an enormous win for him. And now that he has it, he has less incentive to deal with us. So I think President Trump should have pressed harder for a much more detailed statement, ones which included all sorts of things like, for instance, a firm pledge to give up all nuclear weapons, a pledge to give up all ballistic missiles, short and long range, a pledge to dismantle the weapons infrastructure, of course, agreement to a strict inspections regime. And also, I think they should have committed to giving the Japanese an accounting of the abductees, those people who had been kidnapped by Kim's father and grandfather. This is important because the Japanese want it, and the United States has to take care not only of itself, but also its friends and allies. It might be ambitious, but it's where we need to end up, and we had a lot of leverage going in. And at this point, we have less leverage. That's not to say that that's a fatal mistake. President Trump still has a lot of power over both North Korea and its major power sponsors, Russia and China. So we can remedy this, but President Trump will be working uphill, and that, I think, was unnecessary. This is a time where I think the North Koreans did very well, and we did not do as well as we should have.
Do we know exactly what is in the agreement that they signed?
No, we don't. We have the broad outlines. The agreement text has been released. Apparently, there are things that are not included. But if President Trump, if there were a lot of things that were in our to our advantage, President Trump would have told us during the press conference, as he did, for instance, with the North Korea's pledge to destroy its missile engine testing facility.
Do you think it is true that they're on the path toward complete denuclearization?
The North Koreans may not think that they're on a path to complete denuclearization, but this is really up to President Trump, because President Trump, even without the use of force, does have the power to make them do what they thought they would never do, which is to give up all of their weapons. They certainly don't want to do it, but this is not a Kim question. This is a Trump question.
What could we have done better during the summit?
During the press conference, he dropped a stunner that the United States was going to suspend military exercises during the discussions on the nuclear agreement. This is deeply misguided. The reason is we need a high state of readiness to defend South Korea, and we need a high state of readiness to deter the North Koreans in the first place. Our readiness is going to degrade, erode very quickly without these exercises. And if these negotiations take a long time, our alliance will become hollow. You know, President Trump seems to think that American forces are mercenaries, that we're there just to protect the South Koreans, and this is altruistic. Well, no, it's not. We have a business interest on the Korean Peninsula. We have something like 140,000 or so Americans in South Korea. And for about a century and a half, the United States has drawn its Western defense perimeter off the coast of Asia. And so South Korea is now an integral part of that perimeter. This is for the defense of America. So we're in South Korea. Yes, we're there to protect South Korea, but we're also there to protect America. And I don't think President Trump understands that.
Were the exercises more of a show than actual readiness? Can't we still be militarily ready without having these kind of exercises?
No. We have two armies. They have to work together, and they've got to practice doing that. And if they don't practice, They will not be able to be at a high state of readiness. They very well, at the end of the day, may be able to defend South Korea, but we would do so at a much greater cost of life. And so we're talking about the safety and security of Americans and South Koreans. The idea is to deter the North Koreans. When you have a low state of readiness, you give the North Koreans an idea that they can reach out and do something horrible. And this is on the path that we are, and this is a mistake. Hopefully it's a mistake that we can recover from. Hopefully the president will change his mind. But if he doesn't, we're putting ourselves into risk and danger.
Did America gain anything from this summit?
Yes, we did. We got pledges from North Korea, which are vague, and which President Trump can use as markers and enforce later on. So that is important. The North Koreans, are certainly cynical in many of these things, but it's up to President Trump to hold them to it. We have the power to do that. So if we don't do it, it's on us.
But you feel the North Koreans gained more.
Yeah, the North Koreans gained much more from this summit than we did. Or let me put it more precisely. The North Koreans gained so much more than they should have gained. We had the leverage. We've gave up a lot of that leverage and got relatively little in return. You know, negotiation 101, you give something up, you get something back. In this balance, the North Koreans did really, really well. And considering all the leverage that we had, we did really, really poorly.
Do you think an invitation to the White House is appropriate for Kim Jong-un?
I don't think that it is. My general view, though, is that we should not be inviting despots to the White House in the first place. We already do that, though. We give the Chinese state visits, and I think that is inappropriate because Chinese human rights practices, especially in their minority areas, approach those of North Korea. So we shouldn't be inviting the Chinese to the White House. We shouldn't be inviting the North Koreans. But if you invite the Chinese, well, maybe you should invite the North Koreans because you've already broken that precedent. So this is a complicated issue. But I don't think that in general we should be legitimizing hardline rulers. And so therefore, I think that we need to have a reexamination of who gets an invitation to 1600 Pennsylvania Northwest.
What about for those who say, you know, you got to start somewhere. No other world leader has met with him. No one's had a conversation with him. This might be a path toward denuclearization. That's a plus.
Well, certainly. And President Trump deserves a lot of credit for getting the North Koreans to a point where they would make pledges, cynical or not. And President Trump did that because of really two things. First of all, enhanced UN and U.S. sanctions on North Korea, cutting revenue flows to the regime by half, according to U.S. government estimates. Also, the threats of war. Those moved not only North Korea, but also South Korea and China, dramatically changing their postures because they were concerned about what President Trump might do. And that actually was beneficial in terms of getting the North Koreans to be more amenable. But having said that, though, we could have gotten a lot more from this summit. So while President Trump deserves a lot of credit for getting us here, he at the last moment, I think, wilted.
Gordon, what are the next steps?
The next steps are for Secretary of State Pompeo and National Security Advisor Bolton to go to Pyongyang, which I believe that they are scheduled to do sometime next month. This is when negotiations get really difficult. This is when we're going to have to use the leverage that we have. And we've got to be willing to apply pressure, not only on North Korea, but also its major power backers, Russia and China. So this is where it gets interesting. But it's good that we're scheduling these meetings early, because although this could be a long process, we need to get it going as quickly as possible, because it's in our interest and the interest of the international community to wrap this up quickly, as President Trump suggested during his press conference.
Gordon, what did I not ask you? What else do we need to know?
President Trump, to his credit, did two things. First of all, he talked about Otto Wambier, the University of Virginia student who came back in a coma a year ago this week. And that's important. Also, President Trump mentioned that he raised human rights with North Korea. That is something that his predecessors failed to do. So I think it's President Trump deserves a lot of credit for that. Also, the other thing apparently on the campaign trail, families talked to President Trump about the remains of soldiers during the Korean War. And President Trump specifically included that in the joint statement. I think that's terrific. We should all be proud of our president for doing that. And clearly, President Trump has a heart. A lot of people criticize our president for a number of things, but he does have a heart, and we should all be proud of him for that.
Gordon Chang is a blogger, American columnist. He's written the books The Coming Collapse of China, as well as The Nuclear Showdown. He's a regular contributor to the Glenn Beck Program, Fox News, and CNN, among many, many others. Grateful to have him on the show for a little perspective. You can chime in, 651-989-9226 or 81807. Some of you are wondering what role Dennis Rodman had to play in all of this. I was wondering myself, so I did a little research, and maybe not an official role, but I'll share that with you in just a moment. Jordana here with your reaction to the nuclear North Korean summit between Kim Jong-un and President Trump. Your texts say this: "Hey, Jordana, in negotiations, you only make an offer when you get something of value in return. I failed to see what the U.S. received. North Korea got everything, including legitimacy." Let's see. "Hey, Jor, as far as cancellation of war games goes, exercises, it's a bluff. Negotiation strategy move on his part. There's no way they'll cancel them. By the way, as a former airman who participated in numerous war games over a 20-plus year career, many times we threatened to cancel. We adjusted, redid them, and were always combat ready. I trust Mattis." That's from Rick, texting in from Seattle. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. Report I heard today stated that to get the remains back from Korea for veterans that were lost will cost millions and millions of dollars. Yeah, maybe we'll hear more about that. Next guest, I will ask about what that would cost. But boy, you know, that was a concern of veterans' families. They expressed that to President Trump, and I'm glad to hear that he brought it up with Kim Jong-un. This other texter writes, "Rodman's blubbering was hilarious. Generally, we don't laugh at other people crying, but it is Dennis Rodman." And Susan even said to me before the show, "Hey, what's the story with that? What did Rodman do in the negotiation?" The answer is nothing. He did nothing. That's it. He did nothing at all. In fact, he was in North Korea, but he did nothing. He did speak on CNN to Chris Cuomo. Oh, he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. He began to cry about halfway through the interview, dabbing his nose with a tissue. And he told CNN this: "We really have put ourselves on the line to reach out to North Korea. And they've been so gracious to me, my family, and the United States. So let's make this happen. If Trump can pull this off, more power to him." Now, remember, Dennis Rodman was on Celebrity Apprentice. So he and Mr. Trump are colleagues or friends. They have a relationship. Mr. Trump said last week, Dennis Rodman is a, quote, nice guy, but was not invited in any official capacity. On Monday, Rodman talked about falling in love with the people and culture of North Korea and described Kim as a good friend. He also said this: "This guy wants to be around the world," Rodman said of Kim. "He wants to come to America and enjoy his life. He wants his people to enjoy his life." Yeah, I bet he wants his people to enjoy his life. How about having his people enjoy their lives? I think they would prefer that a little better. Maybe less starvation, less gulags, less being captured off the street and thrown into camps. Possibly. Let's remember, the man is still a dictator. Rodman's interview took place moments after Trump and Kim shook hands. Mr. Trump says, well, you heard what Mr. Trump said. "I feel really great today." But Dennis Rodman was very excited about the whole thing. Yes, there was a little crying going on. He was a little verklempt. All right, coming up at 4, we're going to talk to Frank. And do you know what's in your party's platform? You're going to be surprised after the news.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.